afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scott Hertz, very pleased to be here at the board on the first week of our 41st year.
Of the station.
Yes, as opposed to you and I and whatever. Yes, of the station. CFRU is 40, like this week.
I came here on the Contiki.
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
40 years ago, we washed up and started... No. We were like babies.
Yeah, that's true.
I wasn't a baby, but anyway.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. We are here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be Ward 5, City Councilor Leanne Piper. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk about the latest from the impeachment trial of you-know-who and the latest from the leadership race of you-know-what. Sorry.
So it's a much little, guesswork.
We had to literally run in here, so it's a little bit pithy. But first, we are going to talk to our guests. We are pleased to welcome back Councilor Leanne Piper of CFRU's home ward, Ward 5. Welcome back.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure to be here.
So I wanted to talk about first your big opening number of the year, which was this past Monday at City Council, a motion to support six municipalities in British Columbia who are acting as interveners in the Supreme Court case about the Greenhouse Gas Pollution Pricing Act, a.k.a. the carbon tax. Now we know why we just go by carbon tax. But why is this important, or why was this important for you to, like, what was the impetus for, you know, getting a Guelph's seal of approval on BC cities speaking out about the carbon tax or speaking in favor of the carbon tax?
That's a great question. Happy to answer that. Although I thought we were going to be talking about the impeachment, so I came all prepared with all the latest in the impeachment trial. The carbon tax, as you know, Saskatchewan and Ontario are the only two provinces appealing this through the Supreme Court, even though both provinces' Court of Appeals have ruled that a carbon tax is legal. Under the federal government has a right to levy one. I was talking with a lot of municipal leaders. We're part of a climate caucus across Canada, as well as a group called Municipalities Act, Action on Climate in Ontario. And a lot of us have been talking at the municipal level about our powerlessness. We are the beneficiaries, our citizens are the beneficiaries of the carbon tax rebates and any grants coming from carbon tax revenue. And yet we don't have a voice in this Supreme Court challenge. In fact, the hypocrisy of that challenge is that our provincial taxes are going to fight the federal government and our federal taxes are going to defend that appeal. Mm. And municipalities are left out and we're the ones that bear the brunt of climate change. So let's have our voice heard. The BC municipalities got together at a climate caucus conference back in October. And they said, hey, let's show some leadership on this. They had a very, very short window of opportunity to get that Supreme Court intervener appeal in. And they got it in on time. And so those are the only six that were granted status. I would have liked Guelph to have been part of that. So it'd be seven municipalities, but timing was an issue. So Here we are. And really the only role that we can play is to support those other municipalities. So I'm really hoping that this is going to take off across Canada. Other municipalities are going to pass motions of support. And ideally, if 50% of the population of Ontario, in terms of municipal size, passes similar motions, we can send a clear message to the province that it's time to get on with it. Drop this appeal and let's start actually tackling climate change with some real action.
You would think, though, that message would have gotten out that, if there was a possibility of, like, sort of changing hearts and minds on this, because I know Guelph didn't declare a climate emergency, but so many other municipalities in Ontario have. And, you know, speaking of Guelph, too, our school board here declared a climate emergency even. And if it's like, well, that, speaking of, maybe cities not having the voice that they should.
Yeah, we we kind of declared a climate emergency. Yeah. We changed a word. You know, for a lot of counselors who voted that night, the word meant something to them. And crisis versus emergency, we could talk about semantics. But I think that in the end, there was recognition that we have to get to a solution.
Mm-hmm. Coming out of that, take us into other directions that I want to talk about, but there was a motion that the mayor made, or the mayor proposed after that, about coming back during the midterm review of the procedural bylaw about the standards of how motions of support, like the one you brought, should come forward. Did you take that kind of personally? Because it seemed like, you know, we don't want any more like kind of silliness like this, like what we just did here, right?
Well, it's not the first time we've tackled the issue of intergovernmental motions of support and treading on matters that are technically outside of the municipal sphere of policymaking. And yet, in each of those cases, the impact, the issue very much is part of the municipal discussion. Our constituents are talking about it, and the impact is felt on the ground every day in the city. So this isn't the only time it's come up. The fact that it came up at the end of the meeting after this motion passed was disappointing, because we talk about openness and no surprises, and that was a surprise. I had not been previously informed that an additional motion was going to be tacked onto that. It would have been nice if the mayor had given me a heads up.
I do want to address surprises, because I did write a thing in Guelph Today, and you were kind enough to post a response on social media. I made the point that, you know, the council is very much seems to be of a unified opinion that we want this to be as like tidy as possible. We want our business, when it's in the open council session, to be like a checklist. We're going down the checklist. Check, 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 check. My argument is, this is a messy process, and it's hard enough for people. I'm just for me, and sort of how I've sort of gauged public opinion, it's a messy process. Can't we just admit that it's sometimes messy? That sometimes people are going to have surprises, and then maybe that's okay?
Absolutely. I've been on the receiving end and the giving end of surprises. And there is a difference. If the surprise is held back for political purpose, it's not really a surprise, is it?
Mm.
If a delegation comes to provide additional information, or something happens during the debate, if there's new information that arises through the course of a meeting, then absolutely, those aren't surprises. Those are that is the mess that you're talking about. That's when we need to pause and say, hey, are we making an informed decision here? And if the answer is, I have all the information I have right now to make a good decision, then we go ahead. But if the answer is, oh, I think that needs to be examined a little further, we need to dig a little deeper, we need to go back out for public consultation, I need more information, then we should defer that vote, and we should stop, and we should let the mess happen. Absolutely, there's room for messiness in democracy, and if there wasn't, it wouldn't be any fun.
It seems to me that... And the point is, I think the point is made that, you know, you want to have the best information possible. And sometimes that's not, I mean, I remember it happened at this, I think Councillor Salisbury had some questions about LED lights. And of course, there was no one there to answer his technical question about LED lights. And
I can answer that one. No, sorry. I'm just
if the information
right.
if the answer may or may not change your vote.
Right.
Then we have an obligation to pause.
Mm-hmm.
But if the answer is more out of curiosity, or, you know, I would like to know the cost, but I'm still in favor of LED lights for all kinds of other reasons, then we have enough information to make a decision.
Right. My feeling is just that there's an important distinction between, I don't want to make a decision tonight because I don't have the information, versus the, I don't want anything to come out of left field. And it struck me as just... The incident at the Committee of the Whole a couple of weeks ago, where Councillor Galler brought forward a motion, which was he had worded basically the request that was in the presentation, and then there was this suggestion that, whoa, this comes out of left field. And it's like, no, our energy Guelph asked for a motion, and Councillor Gawler brought a motion. Mm-hmm. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And I think that goes back to how we make decisions. And how we make decisions is there's three different ways. We get a fulsome report, public consultation's been done, we get a summarized synopsis of all the consultation, both pro and con, we get alternative scenarios, A, B, C, and D, and we have to make a choice. Then there are issues that where during the debate, there's all kinds of political arguments. We've got all the information we need, but maybe we really don't have a pulse on the public.
Mm.
And then there's decisions that just do literally come out of left field, that someone has an idea during the course of a meeting. And those are the ones where we really need to go back out to the public. We really need a staff report. We need to find out what best practices in other municipalities. And those are the ones we have trouble managing and making decisions, because one of the hardest things that I had to learn, and I'm still learning about being a city councillor, is what type of questions to ask. Mm. Because I don't know what I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I read my reports. I read them thoroughly. I often do drive-bys on planning applications. I get lots of constituents input. I do research in other municipalities. But I always feel like I'm missing something, and that's the messy part.
Mm-hmm. I actually, since you brought it up about the development planning things, you've been pushing back hard about on different developers about going net zero. You've been doing that for about a year now, so... Mm-hmm. Theoretically, I mean, like some of the planners are frequent flyers at council. Are the answers getting better? Are they anticipating your concerns now?
The answers are getting better. I'm going to give a shout out to those developers who are thinking ahead. They understand where the market is going, not just from a sales perspective and a marketing perspective, because, hey, wouldn't you want to buy a condo that has zero utility bills or something where you have stable energy for the next couple of decades?
In what part of town?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Exactly. So there's the whole marketing. I mean, you can see on the billboards, net zero and net zero yeah. ready. I mean, there is a sales and marketing agenda, and they understand that because they're in a world across the country that's moving to this. There is also, I think, an understanding and an appreciation of our goals. We are never going to meet our net zero 2050 goals
mm-hmm.
unless we start building net zero now, mm. not 5 years from now, not 10 years from now, but right now. Otherwise, we'll never meet our goals, because we're going to end up having to use all of our climate action resources to retooling the 45,000 residential units that are already built. We mm-hmm. can't start putting money towards the ones that aren't built yet. We have to change the way our entire energy system operates locally. We've done it before. We are a city, and I think I've said this on your show before, but our city was heated by wood fires
mm.
120 years ago. Everybody was heated by wood fires. We transitioned to coal. We transitioned to oil furnaces. You know, when I moved to Guelph, there was an oil furnace in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Who's heated on oil now?
Mm-hmm.
So we've transitioned our entire energy system at least three times in the history of this city. Mm. We can do it again.
That's where PACE comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit about PACE? Because I think that I'm not sure we know too terribly much about PACE in terms of the how that's going to look like.
Yeah, I mean, it's an energy retrofit mm-hmm. program. PACE doesn't really, it's a term used in the U.S. to define a program where the municipality provides the guarantee of a loan to help you retrofit your home to better energy standard or net zero, ideally net zero. Because we recognize that most homeowners aren't in a position to be able to, you know, take $10,000 or $20,000 and change their energy systems.
Mm-hmm.
But if we add that $10,000 or $20,000 to the municipal, to their, you know, put it with the property,
right,
and it's added to their municipal profile, property tax, and it goes with the property, Then there is some recognition that there's financial resources available to help. Now, the idea is that every household in Guelph will take that opportunity. That's what's going to get us to net zero.
Mm-hmm.
But if you own a home and you don't, you're not interested in doing it now, you know that you can pass that on to the next homeowner if you do it, and then you sell your house in a year, it passes along. So it's right. Not all on your back.
And I think this is maybe where the confusing part is. It's the city will administer the program, but it's not city money that is being loaned to people.
Correct. It's a financial institution that will front that money. And Our Energy Guelph is our agency, our local organization that is spearheading the entire project as a whole. Mm-hmm. So they'll take the lead on that.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the motion that we were just talking about was. Our Energy is now coming up with the proposal to how the program will work, the nuts and bolts of the program.
The nuts and bolts. And we need the nuts and bolts to make that informed decision. So the concept is there. The concept is good. The concept is sound. The concept has been proven in other jurisdictions. But we have to adapt it to local circumstances.
Mm-hmm. I want to dig into this topic because it sort of made the news. It feels like it kind of got buried. But there were two city managers who left City Hall before the holidays, Helen Lofton and David Godwalt. This is sort of kind of feeding the conspiracy pool that there's a. What are you laughing at?
Are you feeding the conspiracy pool?
I try to drain the conspiracy pool.
That's our new show.
that is a pretty good show.
I like
conspiracy
it.
Pool.
Conspiracy pool.
We've got music. Excellent.
Coming up after Coast to Coast AM. deep cut for all the Ancient Alien fans.
I like it, yeah.
But no, there is always like this concern when we have turnover like this that there's a churning sea of chaos in City Hall, that you have high-level people departing here. What insight can you lend to this?
The insight I have is that in any complex organization, you have people coming and going. That happens here at the university. It happens at municipal level, and happens in big businesses and Fortune 500 companies. The pace at which that happens is subject to a lot of influences. What's happening in other municipalities, in some cases, the coming and going is they've been recruited or they're moving up in the sector, in the public sector, to other municipalities, or going to the private sector. They all always have the opportunity to take on other jobs, and people leave for that reason. And the municipality is also a complex place to work, and jobs change.
Sure.
Job functions change, and we have to be adaptable to that.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, too, though, and this is maybe a sneak preview of what my Guelph Today column is going to be this weekend, but I wonder if it would help if maybe the city was a bit more open about these things. And, you know, we have kind of like best employer, like, you know, BNN and other places come out like best places to work in Canada. I don't expect the city to like jockey like that, because, you know, the city's not a private business. It's the administrative arm of a city. But I do wonder if we had like stronger insights in terms of like what is like, maybe there's some kind of reporting, like what is it, how do the employees feel working for the city?
That's a tough one. And that's hard for me to answer, obviously, because we're not in City Hall every day. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know the comings and goings of why people leave and come to the city of Guelph.
Right.
And it's probably better that way. The city council only hires one person, and that's our CAO, Scott Stewart. Mr. Stewart is responsible for administering the rest of the organization in order to meet performance goals and strategic plan goals that have been set out by council. How he does that is not determined by council.
Yeah.
So we don't have the answers to those questions.
Yeah.
So if we don't have the insight, I guess the public isn't going to have the insight.
Right.
As well, there is a line, there is a boundary on people's personal circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So if an individual is leaving for family reasons or medical reasons, or they get a position elsewhere, Is that really any of the public's business?
Right.
You know, if all of a sudden Scotty and Adam no longer had a Thursday afternoon 5 o'clock show whatever reason, would you want the public, like how much do you want us to delve into things that are related to human resources?
I understand that there'll be six people who will be tremendously disappointed. But
I'm one of those six. I look forward to your show, and I would be one of those six. But I think there's a boundary.
Yeah.
We have to be careful.
I don't disagree with that at all. That, you know, I don't expect somebody to share their life story. You know, that's not.
But the perception of chaos.
Right.
I absolutely get where you're going on that. And I hear it from the public.
Yeah.
And that worries me.
I mean, there's just. Yeah. Because the Today article that Kenneth Armstrong posted had like the worst kind of stuff. Let's say stuff under it about, you know, who's doing what and what's going on. And I feel like a lot of this stuff is nipped in the bud with just like a monochrome of more openness. If somebody leaves because of personal reasons, that's all I need to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if somebody leaves because, you know, the job changed or something a bit more, you know, non-personal centric, shall we say, I wouldn't mind knowing that either. And I think that's what a lot of people are trying to say.
I hear you. And I would concur, because I think the other nuance to that kind of transparency is that we want to attract the best and brightest talent to the city of Guelph. Mm-hmm. And when there is a perception that we don't have a stable administration, we may not be attracting the best employees.
Right.
I think we've done an amazing job of attracting great talent to Guelph. And so I think that will continue. And I look forward to those positions being filled with some amazing new people.
Very diplomatic. Let's talk about some Ward 5 stuff. You had a last swim at Centennial Pool.
I did.
Do you want to talk about that?
That was a little sad moment. I went to Centennial. I remember swimming in that pool. Yeah, lots of good memories at Centennial Pool. I also feel that recreational facilities across the city are going to the outlying areas, and that really in the center of the city, we're losing amenities.
Mm.
And so what I hope is that the loss of that pool doesn't indicate a trend to losing other facilities.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel there's a danger? Like where else might be in danger?
The arena is there. We have an arena at Centennial, and again, it's central and it's very functional. And we are desperate for ice time.
Yeah.
I've often heard, well, you have the university, but the university rinks, the university pool, the university gym, all the university facilities are belong to the university.
25,000 people here are using them too.
Well, they're
absolutely. Yeah. Those are not public facilities in the way that a municipal facility are. Municipal facilities are. And the time available for the public to use them, the rental time, is, I'm not even sure there is any ice time available.
Yeah.
So we can't substitute public amenities by filling it in with the university or the Y or private facilities.
Right. I mean, still costs to get into the Y too. Of course, there's the Parks and Rec master plan being worked on right now. Is there still public feedback being collected on that right now?
Well, the important thing to remember is there is public feedback being collected at 24/7, 7 days a week. Even though public comment may have closed on our online portal, sending an email to parks@guelph.ca or sending it to your city councilor is always welcome.
Mm-hmm. Good tip. We are kind of running out of time, but I do want to ask you what's kind of on your radar, like especially here in Ward 5, what's kind of like in constituents affairs here are you working on or concerned about?
Leash-free dog parks.
Ah, yes. Which is coming
very,
up on Monday.
Very controversial in that we opened a facility at Peter Mazursky Park in the East End with a Ward 5 site at Bristol Street that was slated to be our second facility. That has not been a smooth opening of that park. There's been a lot of concerns about noise and dog feces and parking and a whole host of other unanticipated consequences. And that item is going to come back to council on February 3rd for a review. And I anticipate we'll have a lineup of delegations that night. Bring your PJs, Adam.
Well, it does start in the afternoon because it's a committee meeting. I still think
you'll need your PJs.
I hope it doesn't get to
snacks,
the PJs.
At least take a snack.
Snacks, yeah. Snacks is always a good tip.
Dogs and cats are the two municipal issues you just never want to bring to an agenda.
What about parking? Parking must be up there, right?
Parking's up there, too.
Just don't do it all in one night.
Well, we'll see what happens. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Very easy. Email Leanne, leanne.piper@guelph.ca is the easiest way to get a hold of me. I also am on multiple social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, all at Leanne Piper, and happy to hear about any issue from anyone across the city.
All right. I'm glad we were finally able to get you in. We've been working on getting you into the show for a couple of months, but we're glad we were able to make it happen.
Thanks for sticking with me.
All right. Thank you. And we hope you stick with us because this is not the end of the show. We still have a whole back half of the show where we're going to talk about impeachment and the conservative leadership race here in Canada. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Ah, yes, in the original mono, that was the Rolling Stones, you probably guessed, with the Under-Assistant West Coast Promotion Man, which is the B-side of the very first song that was played on CFRU back in 1980, Satisfaction, 1965. But since we thrive on the B-side, that's a song that you probably never heard. Now you have, so I hope
Thrive at the B-side.
Thrive on the B-side. Another good new show name, so... We're going to have so many shows, we don't know what to do. Well, we know what to do. We're always doing the homework for these shows, so.
There's not enough time in the day new shows.
We should camp out in one of the studios and just do shows for weeks at a time, so. Just play the Rolling Stones. No.
Well, you can do worse than the Rolling Stones, I guess. Shoot, what were we even talking about?
Something about the impeachment. Is that first off the top?
Yes, I was trying to find a thing here on Twitter that I had tweeted. Yes, here it is. So this is still going on right now. So in the impeachment trial, when we last talked about it on last Thursday, the Democrats were finishing up their third and final day of their opening arguments. Then they went into the third day on Friday, and then the president's defense team began on Saturday. They went for a couple hours, then came back on Monday and did 2 days of their opening arguments. Now we are into the second day of questions from the Senate. And then tomorrow we could have a vote on about whether or not they will continue with witnesses. So the big thing right now is, I mean, it's kind of still where we were this time last week, where we had who's going to vote for witnesses, and that seems to still be the question. It seems likely that Mitt Romney might vote for witnesses. It seems unlikely that anybody else will.
There was talk of like some, I don't know if it's like a soft Republican vote of a few people that aren't, they're not completely committing to witnesses, but they're not totally against it either. I guess they're trying to have it both ways, I suppose. But yeah, Mitt Romney is definitely one of the ones. At one point, I think Mitch McConnell said that they didn't have enough votes to stop it. So it's a bit fluid, I think, in terms of the number it's going to take to get. Is witnesses a simple majority? I couldn't find that out.
It's a simple majority. It's 51.
So people realize the impeachment is 2/3, though, right? So 2/3 of the Senate for impeachment, but all other administrative, well, not all other things, but have you even watched any of the questions? The questions, if people haven't, if you've just been watching the highlights, it is almost ridiculous. It's they have to be handwritten.
Yeah.
Like it's 17 whatever, 18 whatever, and then brought up to the judge. The judge is reading them, right?
Yeah, or, Justice John Roberts is reading them.
I tuned in for about an hour today. I was telling Adam before we started here, and it was really, really painful because it was every question that I heard was just political point stuff. I didn't really hear anything procedural. And then I heard later, and not much later, because this is all evolving this afternoon, and I guess they're still talking right now. Rand Paul was trying to reveal the name of the whistleblower.
Rand Paul submitted a question where he was asking about a relationship between somebody who was part of some sort of staffer on the Intelligence Committee, but worked at the National Security Agency, not the National Security Agency, but the National Security Council with somebody else. And John Roberts, the Chief Justice and the man who's presiding over this, said he would not read the question because one of the people named in the question has been one of the people mentioned as a potential candidate for being the whistleblower.
It sounds like everybody knows who this whistleblower is. Well, like, there are a couple, Washington secret.
I mean, there are a couple of names floating around.
Yeah.
And there have been people on Fox News certainly unafraid of saying the person's name. But I mean, this is like any whistleblower situation where that person is sort of meant to be protected, their identity protected, because that's how you treat whistleblowers. That's the whole point of being a whistleblower, right? So that your identity is protected so that there's no like recrimination on the part of the person you are blowing the whistle against. And certainly Donald Trump isn't known for, you know, wrathfulness or vengeance or for trying to take swipes at people who go against
him. The largest Fox 40 whistle. Just keep blowing. Everybody's like, whoa, the tweets.
Yeah.
Oh, the tweets.
The thing that's happened today was that Adam Schiff was asked about the subpoena, like the House trying to get subpoenas.
Shifty Schiff.
He said that as Trump's lawyers argue in the Senate that the House should have gone to court to enforce subpoenas, basically that Donald Trump is in the wrong for not answering the congressional subpoenas in the first place.
That in itself could be impeachable. Is that correct? I think so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that is one of the charges he's been impeached with is obstruction of Congress. Is that at any opportunity or any turn that the Congress has said, like, hey, we want some documents. Hey, we want these people to come and testify. And he's like, no, they're not going to do that.
It started with, like, the tax returns all those years ago and went from there, right?
Which is still being litigated.
I'm just not going to give it to you.
Right. And it's so, it, you know... They're still struggling with it. And to say that we had this, we were talking about this off air with Leanne Piper too, that, you know, we had Alan Dershowitz getting up. I mean, there's just irony all over the place because you had Ken Starr
like,
saying
that Alan Dershowitz. Yes, that Alan Dershowitz.
Ken Starr got up during the opening arguments for the defense and said that we're living in an age of impeachment. We really have no idea how we got here. It's like, really? You, Ken Starr, who started an independent counsel investigation into a shady real estate deal that the Clintons did, has no idea how we got to the age of impeachment when you dug in and found out that Bill Clinton lied about having a consensual sexual relationship with an intern instead and brought that forward as impeachable? You, Ken Starr, have no idea how the age of impeachment began. Thanks.
Unbelievable.
Thanks for nothing. But speaking of Dershowitz, Dershowitz gets up yesterday.
Doublespeak Dershowitz. Sorry, that's my nickname for him, not Trump.
That may be too many syllables. But no, Dershowitz gets up and says something to the effect of, if the president thinks he is acting in the best interest of the nation, you can't impeach him.
So, even though what he did is impeachable, you can't impeach him because
you can't impeach him
because public interest.
It's in the public interest.
How's that
if he
for
thinks
like,
he,
that
it's not even if he's acting in the public interest. If he thinks he's acting,
he
in
thinks
the public
he's acting.
Interest.
See, and that's key. That is a different thing.
Which is amazing because then you can, you know, for all these people who are screaming bloody blue murder about Obama and Obamacare and how he should probably be impeached for that. Well, you know, Barack Obama thought he was acting in the public interest, you know, with the Affordable Care Act.
So we can't impeach him then, according to Dershowitz. But
I mean, according to the Dershowitz, let's call it the Dershowitz standards. But it's just bizarre. It's just bizarre, the arguments. And then somebody answered a question today talking about Trump's poll numbers, one of his lawyers. And it's like, are you purposely trying to make this like crazy town caricature of all this too?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if it was the same lawyer. Well, this one I heard that, we have the highest employment for black Americans. It was all this stuff that was like, it was just, this guy was just saying stats and you know, the usual lawyer style, and politicians though, for that matter, not really answering the question. But to the witnesses, and it sounds like the most interesting will be Bolton if he does get the call up.
Right.
Because what's the name of the book? John Bolton has put out
The Room Where It Happens.
The Room Where It Happened. Yeah. He's put together this book isn't even out. It's a manuscript for a book. And I think the security services in the States were like, well, there's actually a bunch of stuff in this is classified that really shouldn't be in there.
Well, it's going through like a redaction process. Like this happens
just black bars all the way through.
When you're a national security professional and you have access to certain information that's not there to the general public, you have to submit your manuscript so people in the national security advisory apparatus can go through it and go, nope, nope, but nope.
It sounds like there's a lot of meat in there, particularly the leak or whatever was, and I don't think this is a secret, that Trump had told Bolton that he was going to hold up the Ukraine money until the dirt surfaced on the Biden's father and son, Biden, Joe and Hunter. Mm-hmm. What about Hunter? Mm-hmm. Well, what about Hunter? So that, and so supposedly it's in there. And has the smear begun on Bolton yet, or?
The smear is in full.
No, but from Trump particularly, or is it like, his mustache was too trimmed. That'd be, you know, the usual. What did
Trump
he call
said
him?
That, yeah,
Bobblehead Trump, Bolton. Or,
Trump did tweet, he said that Bolton should have brought all this to his attention.
You were there, Donald.
Bolton did bring it to attention. But it's amazing, like, watching clips of, like, Fox News people go on about, this isn't the Bolton they know. He's now a left-wing radical. And
oh,
I was like,
yeah.
Left-wing radical John Bolton? The guy who could not get enough Senate votes to be made the UN ambassador. He was so hated by Democrats, they couldn't get the 60 votes.
He's like King Hawk, right? Like,
yeah.
Bomb them. Whoever, just bomb them. It'll be fine.
So
it's in our public interest. Just bomb everybody. That's Bolton.
Is
right?
The new face of the left, John Bolton? Are you kidding me?
The left's
me?
In big trouble. America left's in big trouble.
But it's crazy. And then I wanted to mention Pam Bondi too, because Pam Bondi is this.
Sorry, you have to. I don't know anything about
this
person.
She's going on about the Biden's corruption. Bondi, it was the Attorney General of Florida, when she received 22 complaints about Trump University, but then she took $25,000 in campaign contributions from the Donald Trump Foundation.
Oh, wow.
And suddenly there wasn't a Florida investigation into Trump University anymore.
Was that the orphan money or
and
something?
And now she works, now she works at the White House in the counsel's office. So, like,
surprise.
Between her and Dershowitz and Starr, just
make it stop, for God's sakes, make it stop. And it may stop.
It may stop.
It may peter out by the end of the week, or it may keep on going.
Well, a lot of people, there was a question from Romney, Collins, and Murkowski yesterday where they were like, is it possible that Donald Trump had more than one motive to do this? So, like, is it possible that he was A, wanting to get dirt on the Bidens, and B, also fight corruption in the Ukraine? And a lot of people think that's like the test case for, you know, them to find a justification to acquit or a justification to shut down witnesses. Because if he has more than one motivation to have Zelensky in the Ukraine to investigate, how can we know which one was like the most important one? And like, well, you know,
that's the doubt,
really padding to.
If you can introduce the dose of doubt, reasonable doubt.
Reasonable doubt.
Then must acquit.
I think we're mixing up our Johnny Cochran's and our Raymond Burr's, but... So let's come back here to Canada, where we now have a conservative leadership race. We have actually, it's interesting. There are about 10 candidates.
The race with so many false starts. It's like,
but you have Marilyn,
people out of the gate.
You have Marilyn Gladeau, who is the Sarnia Lambton MP. You have two guys who have tried and failed to win Scarborough Rouge Park.
Who's that?
I can't remember their names, but there was the guy who lost in 2015 and the guy who lost in 2019. They're both running. They both ran in that riding.
I don't know any of this.
Creighton Nutston, who was part of the Freedom Conservative Party in Alberta. Ugh. You have Jim Karahalos, who he had two groups. One is Axe the Carbon Tax, and the other is Take Back RPC Party.
Was this just announced today, these guys? Or
no, they've been like declared for a while, but these are like the other, as everybody's been waiting to find out what this McKay, Ambrose, Baird, Poilievre, and all the others were doing. These were the people who were running. But we did get Peter McKay jumping in last weekend. We got Aaron O'Toole jumping in on Monday. And recent addition, friend of the show, Rick Peterson, is also running again.
That's right. We did have Rick Peterson on.
Yeah.
He came in very close to the basement in 2017, didn't he?
12 out of 14,
so there you have it. I saw a bit of his launch. Where was it at? High Arctic Energy Services. So that's pretty revealing where he's probably coming from. And he's like a flat tax guy too, isn't he? He's like, everybody should just pay whatever in tax.
He's stone cold. I'm a libertarian business type conservative, and that's fine.
But I believe that he's okay with LGBTQ community. And this has become a big issue because it sounds like the convention is the same weekend as Pride.
It is.
And of course, the first heavy question that they've posed to most of these people is, well, will you march in Pride? McKay has said yes. I believe Marilyn Gladeau has said yes as well.
O'Toole has said,
O'Toole has
an asterisk. Yeah. O'Toole is like, I'll march in a Pride parade, but I won't do Toronto Pride unless they let cops do it,
there's a possibility that might happen because it sounds like the Toronto Pride board is having a bit of a shakeup, and depending on how that goes, he may get his wish. So we'll really see as to whether, because I don't think he is of the, and I hate calling them red tortoises. Peter McKay's not, I don't know anything about Marilyn Gladeau, but Peter McKay is not a red Tory. He might be a pinkish Tory. He's not red. No, he's definitely not.
Yeah,
like the gun control or like...
Well, that was the thing too. Good it's Lord. Like they're making these moves like, look at us. We're putting the progressive back in conservatives. But he's like getting his picture taken and with like, I'm pro-gun shirt. And then you have Aaron O'Toole who seems to be running against cancel culture. And
I saw that. What were they talking about?
Well, what he means is, you know...
I didn't actually see a quote on it. I just saw, like, as a sentence, it was like, he's running against cancel culture.
It's in his video.
What?
It's in his launch video. That's where it's...
What are you talking about, section
where he's talking about protecting our heritage and history, and he shows us, like, this video of a John A. McDonald statue coming down somewhere, and it's just like...
For cleaning, probably.
Well,
or no,
that's,
is it in Kingston?
I mean, it completely lacks.
Down in Kingston?
Yeah, I mean,
there's no context here, dude.
It lacks context, but I mean, he's basically trying to draw up this like they're trying to get rid of white culture, and I'm mad. And it's like, dude,
okay, whitey.
People think well of you. Why are you going full Kelly Leach? Never go full
he's going
Kelly Leach.
Gammon faced, yeah. So there was lots of outs in this past week. Charest is like, no. I'm happy in the private sector. I don't even know what he does in the private sector.
Doesn't matter.
Uses
his
connections.
He's on some boards or something.
It doesn't matter.
What does everybody do when they're not in the public sector anymore?
Same for Rona Ambrose. She sounds like she's okay with her. What was the quote? Somebody had said, she has a very nice life right now. I can't remember who it was. Altia Raj, I think it was.
It sounds so pleasant.
She has a very nice life right now. She just want to, well, you know, if you can... toot around on your yacht at Christmas time.
It's like,
you know,
she escaped from that house where the guy had women captive for like 10 years.
Yeah.
She has a very nice life now.
She doesn't need this right now. Poilievre decided he had a one-year-old after getting all the ducks in a row. It's like, oh. Wasn't the day before? It was like,
then he remembered
had
a
baby.
Yeah, he remembered he had a kid.
Oh, my wife. So he played the family card, but he didn't actually use the classic. I want to spend more time with my family, so... I'm kind of sad he's out because he was.
Well, you also have Candace Bergen out.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, what did she say? It was initially, oh, I'm too busy being opposition House leader. And then she was in briefly.
Yeah.
But she's probably just putting the feelers out. But again, not bilingual. So conservatives, you want to win this race, bilingual, and you're down with LGBTQ, you are the winner. And that's why it's Rona or Rana would have it sewn up, in my opinion. Rana would have it like she would be the winner gagnant for the entire. She would win. She'd be the next prime minister, just in my view.
Sorry, Christopher's doing training in the next room, and so everyone was kind of looking at us. So
they must have heard us. maybe. So shout out to the training in the next room. Candace Bergen, AS, Michelle Rempel. Michelle Rempel-Gardner, as she is now, I guess.
She has a married name.
She was, sounds like she's on the fence, kind of feeling it out a little bit. I've seen a few photos making the rounds that she's actually one of her and Erin O'Toole in something today. So she's
good
not,
for them. They're going places.
Yes. They got their picture taken together. So she's not an official yet. And I feel like I'm forgetting somebody because it was a long list.
Well,
list is mostly of people who are not in the race.
Right. It's interesting because there have been rumblings, and I saw some conservative people mention this on CBC, is that there are people who are wanting like Rona Ambrose to reconsider and are trying to push, you know, Michelle Rempel to jump in, and John Baird, people are wanting to jump in.
John,
there's apparently
like
a draft John Baird campaign going on.
Oh.
Which, I mean, if you want to keep pressing on SNC-Lavalin, you probably don't want to get John Baird in, but
no, there's some dirt there, too.
Yeah.
Plus the shenanigans at Candler House in London.
Yeah.
Which I saw from the bus we were on. I was like, hey, that's the place. But anyway, that's where it all went down.
But
I wanted to go in. Like,
there's such it just seems like it's another round of profound dissatisfaction with what they've got that it just makes you wonder, like, what is the point of this party that, like, the most prominent people in it don't want to lead it?
You do it. You go.
Yeah.
I'll sit back here and be deputy dog. I don't. Yeah, you're right. You would think there'd be this. There was lots of. Well, it was 14 the last time, right? So the heavy enthusiasm isn't there, and you have to wonder. You have to wonder why. Is it the split? Because they do have this split, as I mentioned about the red Tories and the Tory Tories. I think Erin O'Toole is clearly going for the blue, true blue right.
Well,
whereas the rest of them are like,
his slogan is true blue leadership.
Is it really?
Yes.
Honestly, I just said that.
It's at the end of this video.
Subconsciously, I may have seen it. I didn't watch the videos because I hate those videos. They are interesting. It's cool to see what
cameo by Leonardo DiCaprio in it.
No, really?
Yeah.
In Erin O'Toole's video?
Well, it's like,
are they shaking
it's like archival footage of Leonardo DiCaprio.
Punching him in the head? Or like, what's this?
No,
like?
It's just Leonardo DiCaprio on a red carpet somewhere.
Is that, I'm going to take that guy out. Is that what he said? I don't know. I like McKay's logo, the three M's as the maple leaf is really, he's got some savvy comms.
That logo game is tight.
Oh, he's like, if it's based on logos, McKay's got it at this point.
Much better
and
than
the lead is McKay with the best logo.
Much better than the Space Force logo, which is a blatant ripoff
of
Star Trek.
Oh my goodness. I was like, really? Yeah. Somebody got a lot of money for that too.
I don't know
and
how.
It wasn't us.
I don't
and
know
I'm
how.
Upset.
I mean, maybe it speaks to the quality of the White House that there was nobody in the White House who was able to stop and say, "Wait, isn't that the Star Trek Starfleet logo?" But I digress. But you're right; the logo game is impressive.
So there's obviously been some cash spent already.
But I mean, it speaks to this, McKay's the clear frontrunner now; he's the one to beat. I don't know about Erin O'Toole, but I think if he was playing more like Erin O'Toole instead of doing like Kelly Leach cosplay, like he seems to be doing about cancel culture and all that, he might have
the rat line.
Like,
bring the rat line back.
He might present like an actual counterpoint, but I mean, it seems to be between those two. Because otherwise you have somebody like this Derek Sloan person who goes on Power Play and tells Evan Solomon's like, look, there's no science that makes people gay. We don't know the science of gayness. Come on. It's like,
who
is
this person? Is
Derek Sloan. Yeah, he's an MP.
Oh, my goodness.
He's a current MP running for
super backbench.
Elected last year.
Oh, that's painful.
Yeah.
So maybe the conservatives definitely have to rein in the painful. So, I mean, they will. Whomever they choose, it won't be that guy.
Well, it won't be that guy, but I mean, that guy.
That guy, you know, he's not going to be running the party. He's probably not even going to be in a shadow cabinet.
Oh, but his private member's bill about abortion will be considered by
But like
somebody.
Viral videos like this are going to be like a bullet wound in the leg of anybody who is in the party. You know,
yeah.
Steve Bozo Harper said 100 million times, I'm not reopening the abortion debate. But
and to his
every time
with that.
Someone in his party talked about it, it hurt him. And yep. The thing of it is, too, remember the conservative majority, when they finally won the majority, it was like 166 seats. Yep. That's not a majority anymore. That's minority.
Yes, now with
you have
the retooling.
To have 180 seats, or 180 seats.
That sounds right, yeah.
To be a majority. So you are not going to make it over the finish line with a majority government as long as you have people like Derek Sloan and people like Richard Dukakis in Quebec who talked about gay being a choice. These guys are albatross. Like, to go back to a Peter McKay quote, it's an albatross. And, you know, there's more than one albatross in the Conservative Party. Andrew Scheer just happened to be the biggest albatross because he was at the front.
Also not marching the parade equals.
But Derek Sloan is going to chase whoever the leader is. Like, not literally or physically, but like these kind of comments, they're literally going to chase whoever's leadership, no matter how many pride parades they march in. And and the LGBTQ people are already suspicious. Like, okay, you're going to march in pride. What have you got? What else have you done? What else have you got?
Well, they'll all need to hit the Duolingo pretty hard too, because what was it? McKay said that instead of saying he was the candidate, he said he had candida. So, you know, it may sound...
He's out of practice, though.
He's out of... He really needs to... You know,
I mean, he was a high-profile cabinet minister, so...
But yeah, you still don't need to be bilingual. The prime minister of this country has to be bilingual, regardless of your politics. If you are not bilingual from, I don't know, Trudeau on, you know, you're not going to get the gig.
No, I'm just... I'm just... In coming to Peter McKay's defense, he might be a bit rusty.
There are apps, Mr. McKay.
Yeah, go to Babbel.
Babbel.
Yeah, Babbel.
Sounds like we're We should get them to sponsor us because we need sponsors. We could use them. So if you want to sponsor us, call five. No, don't.
Don't.
Okay, Adam. What do we got? Wrap it up.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go home.
That's it. We're going for a beer.
What a way to end the show. Let's get out of here. That is it for this week's show, and we hope you liked it. You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to the show again, download it from our website every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or on your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog. I bogger down at spannerbook.wordpress.com. The chief assignment editor is shaking his head. It must really be time to go.
And it is time to welcome into the studio DJ Sounds Good to Me, who will be spinning her tunes at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back. We'll be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources, and we will see you then.